So today, during our IBC webinar, we're going to go through part two of the PUA rider, flexibility, fees, and net returns. So last week, we went into a lot of detail, which we're going to skim over some of the main points or what we focused on via the detail on flexibility and such, and really just get into how the net returns work, how the actual PUA load works when I'm contributing money into an account. What we focused on as far as the spreadsheet during the last session, which that is recorded and on our YouTube channel, we can send you the link if you'd like, is a Guardian policy where we looked at just a basic account and then really the impact of PUAs on a policy where we max funded it. We added a term rider. The contributions were larger, around $100,000 a year going into the account. Numbers look good, and the main purpose of that was to demonstrate exactly the PUA fees. All right, so if we've got it up right here, this is just a paused recording of the actual webinar we conducted where it shows them side by side the analysis. As I pay money into PUAs, the company had a 5% load, and I wanted to see what my net growth was. So we're going to focus on that today, but with a bit more of a simplified policy option without a term rider. I just want to strip down to the basic PUA contribution so I can see what everything looks like. So a couple main points we will touch on first is on the PUA flexibility. Quick refresher here. It 100% depends on the insurance carrier. And what's dependent on it is the flexibility. And what I mean when I say that is the manner of how I make contributions to the policy. I can pay into an account via PUAs on a scheduled or unscheduled basis. Scheduling is fairly simple. That's just setting up a PUA payment to be made on the same basis as a base premium contribution. Unscheduled contributions are very desirable because what that means is I can commit really to just the base premium and pour in extra payments whenever I want. And the key really on flexibility is to identify what an insurance company allows and what they do not allow. When it comes to PUA contributions, in particular on the unscheduled payments, this is where different companies will have limits. We've had more segments than I can count on the four major mutual companies and their flexibility features. If you were to take all insurance companies out there, including the four major mutuals and everyone else, you're going to see unscheduled contribution limits really in these ranges. What I forgot actually is one where some companies just won't allow it, or say you have to go through medical underwriting if I want to add money to PUAs. But typically on an unscheduled basis, you'll see these limits. And the no limit down here, the only company I've seen this with is a smaller B-rated company, SML, which is used for the banking concept. Not a bad company by any means. I just have not seen the historical performance I'd like to have seen yet as far as using them. But we'll continue to ask the carriers to produce it. So on PUAs, here's really what we focused on during our last session and what we're going to focus on today as well is the fees. Every insurance company, well, most insurance companies, there's some companies, one in particular, that has no PUA loads. That company is a very small company called Mutual Trust. They don't charge fees for their PUA contributions. And with that, their performance is not that strong. But most companies, especially the big four, will have a load. It's a service fee attached to the policy. Meaning, when I make a PUA deposit, the company has in their contract language a service fee that's going to be pulled out. Last week we focused on Guardian. Their service fee is 5%. Today, we're going to focus more on MassMutual. You're going to see their service fee, depending on which rider we use, or if we use both. One is 7.5%. That's the Ailer component. And the Lister component is presently 8%. Now, again, when I see these different fees, the biggest piece to take away from all of this is that this is a gross fee. Because on paper, this is scary to say, if an insurance company, say MassMutual, is paying a 6.4% dividend, which is a gross figure to start with, and they're going to charge me 7.5% or 8% for a rider, don't make sense. That means I'd be paying more than I'm earning. This is just on paper if I'm brand new, if I'm reading through a contract. Where in reality, you're going to see that the fees documented on these contracts never come close to what they are. In the first year, I see a slight negative hit in most cases. And then after that, I see the interest earned easily outweighs the PUA load, which again, the spreadsheet we're going to go through today will lay all that out. We put a lot more detail in today's spreadsheet to keep it simplified, which we'll get there very shortly here. So let's progress on. Important to look at the net returns. This is definitely true. It's one of the more complicated or misleading topics that exist on cash value life insurance policies. Aside from just the net returns and how dividends work, are these fees and such in the contract language? So we're going to look at some spreadsheets here. And again, we're going to focus on MassMutual today. What I want to look at first is this is from a MassMutual policy, where I just pulled out some of the definitions of their actual PUA riders. So we've got additional life insurance rider, Ailer. This is MassMutual's term for their basic PUA rider, adding money into cash. Okay, so if I'm going to add money into cash, we've got a lot of definition on their flexibility here. What I just want to focus on, though, is right here. When the rider payment is made, less the payment expense charge equal to 7.5% of any rider payment. So that tells us what MassMutual's pure PUA fee is, 7.5%. Now, the other feature that we'll often attach to MassMutual policies because it's critical for flexibility is our Lister component, our life insurance supplement rider. And a quick refresher on this, this is a combination of money going toward PUAs, which is the majority of our Lister contribution, and then towards a decreasing term rider. Meaning when I say decreasing term rider, my term amount decreases as my whole life amount increases. The only thing I want to highlight here is, again, under the mechanics, here you go. The expense charge currently equal to 8% of any rider premium. They're referring to the Lister rider. And then we also see their guaranteed rate, meaning in a worst-case scenario, MassMutual does reserve the right to increase the fee for that to 10%, where it's presently 8%, which... well, even if they build 10%, you're going to see it's nowhere near that in reality. But again, it's good to see this. We didn't go through this in a Guardian contract language last week. We can certainly provide one of those. It's right there in the PUA service fee, 5% in a full illustration. But let's continue here. What I want to focus on is what we're going to look at on the Excel spreadsheet we've got up is first, a basic L100 policy where we pay in $10,000 a year for 20 years. And on the first example, we're going to look at putting 100% of our contribution toward the base premium. This would be what I refer to as a great example of exactly what not to do. Why we're going to look at this is when we analyze the actual PUA performance, we're going to look at a policy. I'm going to pull that up next, but we're going to see what the cash value is based off of just paying in premiums, then also adding money into cash. It's going to help us peel out the accurate PUA values. So we've got this sheet, which is all premium. And the second model we will look at is the exact same policy. We're not going to add a term rider. I'm not going to focus on break-even points and optimal design, which is what I usually do. Because again, I just want to be laser focused on the PUA portion here. Is we see a total outlay of 20,000. So what we did here is we set the base premium at the exact same dollar figure as the last example. So go back to that. Here's the all base premium policy. Identical. I'll go back. Identical $10,000 premium. And then put the other $10,000 into Ayler. Again, that's Mass Mutual's pure PUA rider, which again has a fee of what? 7.5% in their contract language. And then we've got our cash values. And if you have questions, feel free to type in the chat box. I'm just kind of laying out what you're going to see on the spreadsheet here. And this spreadsheet should be easier to follow than last week's. All right, so let's pull it up. So we've got our accounts. On the left, we have the pure base premium policy. And this is pulled exactly from the illustration. Just going to go 20 years. That's how long we funded it. Again, trying to keep this as simple as possible. So with paying just base premium, that looks great, right? Breaking even year 12. Again, we don't want to design a policy like this. We're just going to take these cash values to help determine what my PUA cash value and performance is. So that's the first sheet we're going to look at or use for a study. And then we've got the 50-50 blend. And the main takeaway from this is that if this is my policy, if I'm the consumer, I contribute $10,000 toward premium and $10,000 toward Ayler or PUAs. There's my outlay, total of 20. And here is my total cash value. So this is pulled directly from the illustration. If we go back to that, let's just do this. Year one, 97,37. Year 20, 593,000. Let's go back to that illustration. Make sure they match up. Year one, 97,37, total cash value. Year 20, 593. Okay, so they match up good. Great proof to show I didn't make numbers up. Not that I would do that. So what we did here then is the next column is really just peeling out the PUA performance. And this assumes the exact 7.5% load that MassMutual has in their contract language. So why we just did a basic 50-50 split, I didn't want to factor in the term cost because that creates kind of oddball numbers and such, is if I pay a $10,000 PUA contribution, and if I have a 7.5% load, pretty simple math, $750. So my actual cash value, if they deducted that, should have been what? $10,000 minus $750, $9,250. But when we look at the illustration and my net cash values, this is my pure PUA cash value, how we factored this. is we just took the total cash value from the blended policy and subtracted it from the all base premium account. Since the only difference is we added another 10 grand in PUAs. So if you add this guy and over in the base premium column, that'll equate to the middle example. If you add those cash values up. But again, PUA cash value day one or year one is 97.37. Where the load that MassMutual says, okay, we're going to dock $750, came nowhere near that. That's closer to 2.6% is what the net fee they've taken out. And why that is, these are gross loads. And also, we want to factor in the case that the instant I add money into a life insurance policy, what begins to happen? I have the guaranteed component and any surplus, which is going to equate to my total dividend. It begins to earn interest right away and starts to compensate for that load. Right, we've come up against cases where we talk to individuals looking at policies, they talk to another agent, and someone says that, so they tell us that someone said to them, you know, you just want to have a policy with all base premium because the company is going to charge you 7.5% or 8% for those fees for those PUA riders. You don't want that. I'll use a sales tactic to sell more base premium, which is not the case at all. We don't want to do that. The more money we have going towards PUAs, the more money we will have in cash. And we do have a max blended policy just for comparison's sake. We'll pull that up at the end here too. Main point. So each time I make a $10,000 PUA contribution, here, this model assumes that 7.5% fee is deducted from each payment. So what we've got over here in purple is, okay, as my PUA cash value grows, this is the overall growth, meaning I'm tallying up my total PUA contributions. 10 years in, I've plugged in $100,000 solely in PUA payments. Factoring in, there's 7.5% load plus the illustrated dividend of 6.4%. There's my gain, $23,000. The compound interest alone more than makes up for those fees. All right, so those fees are scary on paper. However, when you actually start to break things down, kind of the same thing we touched on last week, where it hurts us, where we actually see a net negative return, is in the first year. The Guardian example, we were positive year two. Here, year two, this is a pure traditional L100 policy. We're negative 0.016, almost a wash, and then positive from that point forward. Factoring in the exact same fee the company takes out each year. All right, and then green. This is just the basic PUA cash value. So meaning at year 20, I've paid in 200 in PUAs and not factoring in any of the growth based off of my premium dollars. That's a separate column. We peeled it out intentionally. My PUA cash is worth 326, almost 327. Add the 326 plus the 266. And then you'll get your total cash value of 593. That's everything combined in that middle column. Know this is a lot of material. So this obviously is being recorded like all of our calls, so you can refer to it as much as you need. Main takeaway is those fees are always gross fees whenever we look at them from any insurance company. We never see a true 7.5% or 8% charge deducted from our policy. We won't see it because the instant we pay it in, interest begins to yield. So let's continue on here. There was the illustration. Let's look at one more, which we did not put on Excel. But we can kind of see the exact same thing here. That one is off by a couple bucks. Here we go. So this is the same 45-year-old male. And this matches, this more so duplicates the Guardian scenario we looked at last week, where it showed $100,000 a year going in. We had a term rider attached too. Total outlay, $100K a year. Main question should and always will be, where is my money going? If I give the insurance company or an agent $100,000 and they're going to direct it towards different areas of my policy, it again can go towards premium or cash. Premium or cash, that's it. So again, base policy insurance, that represents my premium. We set it at 10%, $10,000. And then we've got money going towards LISR, which again is a combination of money going towards term insurance and PUAs. That's at 15. And the rest we allocated towards ALER. So that means off of the 75,000, technically there's a 7.5% charge there. And off of the 15, because that's LISR, there's an 8% charge. So if I take, let's just take the 75. Now let's lump them both together. That's 85,000. No, I'm sorry. That's 90,000. You can tell it's the end of the day. Look at my cash. 86,381. Of this LISR payment, there is a term cost here. Let me get you the exact number, actually. I was working on this earlier. The term rider cost in this particular illustration is about $1,100. So if I pay in 90,000 in PUAs, deduct $1,100, what does that leave me with? And I'm rounding. $88,900. Okay. So after the term cost is deducted, that's the pure PUA contribution. My net that actually is deposited in cash value in the first year is $86,381. So let's just say it's pure 7.5%. There's no 8% charge. We'll make it a little bit more favorable. We don't even need a calculator for this. If we take 7.5% of 88,900, what does it come out to? Can you do it this way? $66,800. So if you deduct $66,800, I know I'm going deep here, that's much less than 86,300. No need to do the math there. Main point being is, again, that 7.5%, any load we see from any insurance company can be scary at first glance. Keep in mind, just like the dividend rate, just like the guaranteed rate, it is always a gross rate. What we want to do is crunch the net returns on the cash value of a life insurance policy. Go back to the basics as far as when is my break even and such. So last week and this week probably takes the cake as far as the most in-depth or and most complicated webinars. Hopefully it's helpful, especially if you're trying to really dig into the nitty-gritty of these policies. Before we conclude here, any questions, feel free to use the chat box. That would be best. Questions on anything we covered this evening or anything in general regarding IBC, high cash value policies, anything and everything. Okay, I see a question come through. Are there cash values in a policy from day one? I notice these cash values are at the end of the year. Good question. So yes, the instant we make a payment, we see cash value show up immediately. What you'll often see, so that's a good remark you made there, a good question, is if we take the policy we just looked at, where the question here was on this illustration, it said cash value end year, 86,381. So if I deposit $100,000, this one is here assuming in the beginning of the year, at the end of that first year, I got 86,381. So what you'll see in a case like this, Adam, with most insurance companies, is if I make that $100,000 payment, day one, I might see 85,500. A little bit less than the end of the year value. And then over that 12-month period, I'll see my value gradually accumulate and it'll hit this value at the end of that year. And to take this one step further, it is always important to look at an in-force illustration every year. When these illustrations are most accurate are year to year. When they're not accurate is when we take an original illustration, see our cash value in 20 years, and then say, hey, it doesn't match up with the original one. That's because insurance expenses, dividend rates, things have changed. So year to year is when they are most accurate. But to answer your original question, you do have cash value in day one. You'll see it accumulate interest and hit that target that you see at the end of each policy year. Sure. Stan, when will this be posted? Tomorrow, most likely. So we upload them the second day. Sometimes it's a little bit later in the afternoon if there's any editing or anything my staff needs to do, but this one is pretty clean. Asher, how you doing? Good question here. So regarding IULs, have a friend trying to push it. What would you recommend showing him to get him to understand? So with IULs, here's how I'll always position them, because we get that comes up, we get them coming up quite a bit, is when you take an indexed universal life insurance policy, in every scenario, that's going to offer a policyholder, a consumer, more potential than a whole life insurance product. The key word there is potential. Why that is you can have the funds linked to the market, S&P 500 or different indexed funds. And if the market continues to produce, you can really do well in the account. The main drawback that I have with them, and this is with the same thing why we stick so closely to the four major mutuals, is that I have not seen any actual historic performance. I see a lot of hypotheticals, but every time we ask a company to produce actual performance before we start representing or selling the company's products, it's some proof and we haven't seen it. And here's what happens with the IUL, just to give you a quick overview. And this is with any universal life policy, is again, you've got more potential. But the issue with it is you have a guaranteed cash value interest rate that is often going to range between 0 and 3%, depending on the company and how we set up the policy. In every case, I have a cost of insurance that is not fixed. It is renewable. So each year I grow older, that cost goes up. In 100% of universal life policies, the costs will exceed the guaranteed interest. That's why when we look at the guaranteed values, we never even break even. It's because those costs outweigh them. So yes, I've got more potential. I can do very well with them. You want to look at all products, consider all options. The only thing we see is that as time passes, more or less what happens with IULs is that the risk is gradually shifted from the insurance company to the consumer as time passes. See, a good follow-up question. Mark, so is the indexed fund, the index strategy with Guardian better? It's a nice option. I mean, what they've done, that's a recent strategy. So that's a whole life product where one can switch back and forth between the dividend and the indexed, or go, you know, 50-50, no problem, meaning 50% of their money in the indexed feature and 50% of their money in the dividend. Really, what happens in that scenario is because it's a whole life product, the guaranteed rate is still 4%. And in every instance, the guaranteed rate still exceeds the insurance expenses with the Guardian product. So because you still have the whole life product, not the universal life, you've got a fixed insurance expense and a guaranteed rate that always exceeds that insurance expense. So you take the risk 100% out of the equation with that Guardian option. And you can switch back and forth between that and the dividend. So it can be a basic whole life if you want it to. Asher, can I be an agent for you? Sure. We work with a lot of people that just refer business, that get into the field and they've got full-time jobs. Some people that want to work with us for case design. We're also working on an agent training package. That'll be some time. We've got it probably about a third of the way done before we're going to launch it, which just trains individuals on how to design policies, how to communicate the concept, how to communicate policies, explain columns, all the nitty-gritty stuff, which I won't go into any more detail on. Any other questions? Did I miss anything? Mark, I am aware of that. I believe you're primarily speaking with Phil. And actually, I did look at that policy design as well. We'll definitely be sure to connect with you at some point. I like to try and touch base with everyone we're working with. David, good question. So are your four major mutual companies, Guardian, Mass Mutual, New York Life, and Northwestern Mutual? If so, since New York Life and Northwestern Mutual use captive agents, how can you work with them? So Northwestern is 100% captive, meaning you have to have a career contract, career agent contract to write their business. For a short period of time, several years ago, I was contracted with them. It's really how I learned a lot of their ins and outs. And if someone really wants Northwestern, I've got a couple contacts that I'm close with where we can easily refer business there. Main point why I mention them as one of the four major mutual companies is they've delivered. So if anyone has a policy or likes their financials for whatever reason, just more so kind of doing the right thing, they're one of the big four companies. They've delivered. That's why we always mention them. New York Life, so they're a semi-captive agency. A lot of people mention that they are, but you can broker business through them. They do have some odd requirements to be able to write business, but it is possible. It can just be a little challenging sometimes because they want you to do things their way. It is possible, though. And again, like Northwestern, the main thing is when you take those four companies, Mass, Guardian, New York Life, Northwestern, they've delivered from a real performance standpoint. And frankly, we use Mass and Guardian the most. I mean, it's kind of a coincidence that they're easier to use just from being 100% broker. And on the agency side, they've got zero issues with brokers using them. But they are flexible. when you look at the actual rules of the Big Four, MassMutual and Guardian can allow for contribution adjustments. I can 10x my base premium, not have to go through underwriting. When someone's interested in being creative with a cash value life insurance policy, paying in more, paying in less, you can do it with all four, but those two are certainly more accommodating. So trying to keep the quality and make it flexible is our goal. Asher, any training on business-owned policies design? Yes. Yes, that was actually my background. Designing policies for businesses before I got into the individual field. Yeah, so we've got a couple other questions here. So David, what do you think about Ohio National, Lafayette Life, and MTL? Yeah, all those companies are used heavily with the banking concept. They promote it in their sales support system as well. They're A-rated. They're all great companies. My only thing with them is I haven't seen any proof. So, I mean, we've been solicited several times by a lot of companies, the three you mentioned and several others that want us to promote them and write their business. And my big thing, this is kind of from my background from designing accounts for corporations and having corporations stress test policies, and I did as well, is we've seen the strongest internal rate of returns with the four major mutuals, whereas everyone else a lot of times will project equal or a lot of times better numbers on illustrations, but then they don't deliver. And just call it from an ethics or moral standpoint, we don't want to put someone in a policy that's really under delivering. Granted, some things are out of our control, interest rates fluctuate, but when I've never seen them even deliver something on par with any of the Big Four or their illustrations. That's where it's difficult for me to do that. And we ask them for proof all the time. So, I mean, once we get some proof of concept, like the other ones have delivered, we'd certainly use them. I mean, that's just a personal preference, too. Hope that answers your question. Asher. Oh, I meant, will you have a webinar on business-owned policies being designed for us? I can do that. Sure. We did have a webinar. We can probably pull it up in the archives, which focused on how corporations use cash value life insurance. And you'll see the design there as well. It's very similar to how we design it for an individual, often just with larger numbers. If you're looking at traditional life insurance products, what we have not done a webinar on is pure COLI and BOLI products, which is a little bit of a different animal. At some point in the future, we'll likely do that. That stands for corporate owned and bank owned life insurance. Sure. Anything else before we conclude? All right. Well, appreciate everyone taking some time. If you have further questions, feel free to reply to the email you had received the link from, or you can email us direct at the info account on the screen. And we'll talk to you all soon.